I'm Jamie Hurst, and for the MSU Denver Alumni Association, we're excited to bring you Bird Talk, a podcast about our alumni, their careers, and their lives.
So it's time for the old guys. You've had the young people the past few months.
I know. We got to bring it back. You know?
Yep.
Yeah. All right. And that was the podcast today, everyone. Today's guest is Brad Kaplan. Brad is a 1982 graduate of the College of Business, where he earned his degree in accounting. Now retired, Brad's impressive career culminated as the Vice President of Finance for the West Division of Comcast, after serving in financial leadership roles at Media One and US West. But Brad's story is about so much more than his professional achievements. Here at University Advancement, we have a term we call the Brad Kaplan Effect. It refers to creating the ideal engagement journey for our alumni. You see, Brad is our perfect alumnus, and if we can create more Brad Kaplans, we can better serve our students and alumni. After graduating and launching his career, Brad stayed connected to MSU Denver through various avenues, and upon retirement, he made his engagement with MSU Denver a priority. Now deeply connected to the university, you can find Brad mentoring students, cheering on Roadrunners Athletics, serving on the College of Business's Advisory Board, and as the treasurer for the Alumni Association. Brad's generosity and wholehearted support of MSU Denver was recognized in 2019 when he received the MSU Denver Philanthropist of the Year Award. Brad, a longtime listener, first-time guest, welcome to Bird Talk.
Well, thank you. That was very nice.
Yeah. So you are a longtime listener. In fact, I think we just found out, according to Spotify, in our recently 2024 Wrapped, you are a number one listener and most engaged person. So put that on your
resume.
That's
fantastic. That's because there's been some competition with people, how many listens they got. And so I had to listen to a few times. So.
Fair enough. I will say, though, you are always the first person the day after an episode is released that will either text me or email me and say, another great show.
Welcome to retirement.
Exactly. I can only wait. That's my most exciting thing to do. So, Brad, where do you want to start? We have so many things to cover today. I know it sounds a little funny in your intro, but we do call it the Brad Kaplan Effect because you are our perfect example of how somebody can, you know, come from MSU Denver, graduate, go on, have a very successful professional career, personal career, raise a family, do all of the things that you did, and then retire and say, you know where I want to settle? I think I want to settle back at MSU Denver because that place still feels like home. Because I think we've known each other, 7 or 8 years now? We've seen that first kind of like, I'm tiptoeing through some of this. And now here we are as the treasurer of our board and the easiest call to make to be on Bird Talk. Hey, Brad, you want to be on Bird Talk? Yeah, I'm there. Right. Yep. So what made MSU Denver? Why was that the feeling when you retired? And I know you stayed connected. And we'll talk a little bit about that through your career. But when you retired, why was it MSU Denver?
I would say I came full circle.
Yeah.
I always looked at MSU as the foundation of my career. I mean, it's where it started. It's where my first job came out of. And so I've always been somewhat connected. And through volunteer organizations that I worked with, I would run into MSU a lot. Mm-hmm. Ann Murphy, she and I go way back through Institute of Management Accountants. And the ability now to come back, help students, help the university, it's totally different than when
I
went.
Sure, 1982,
Completely different. I was walking around campus today and thinking, wow, that's where Lawrence was. Now it's trees.
Right.
And, you know, I just wanted to give back.
Yeah.
When I decided to retire, my wife and I talked about potentially, you know, what are we going to do? She was nervous. She had retired long before.
So she was used to being home, having you away.
Well, and I used to call her a professional volunteer.
Yeah.
She had all sorts of organizations, and she said, you need to find what you love and what you want to do. I pretty much knew the day after my last day at work, I went into Ann Murphy's office and said, what can I do?
Yeah.
And that's when we started the mentoring program that we had. As you say, it's grown from there. Mm-hmm. The respect I have for the people that work here, the students, President Davidson is absolutely amazing. And once you get in here, it's like a magnet. You want to be connected.
Yeah.
And it's been wonderful. And I love coming down here. I love helping out wherever I can.
And I appreciate it. And you found an entry point back to the institution in a very comfortable space with Dean Murphy, you know, the dean of our College of Business, who you'd known for a long time. Wasn't the dean when you were here, but I'm sure you've been in the accounting space with her. I'm not trying to date Anne that far. Although Anne is retiring
I
here.
Know.
So I know. I'm pretty
joining
sure.
Joining the other side.
I know. Retiring and some great plans. plans to travel and head to Italy. It sounds like she's got it all figured out, which I'm excited for her for. But then from there, we've kind of spiderwebbed into other places. I know we first met because you had enrolled in our Learn On programs here.
Oh, that's right.
So we had, it's a now a program we don't operate anymore, but Learn On was kind of our continuing education for really targeting kind of the retirement community. So come down and taste the wines of Spain before you travel abroad, or come and learn Spanish for...
We did the Spanish. Spanish for traveling, which I did. Mm-hmm. My wife was a Spanish teacher, so she didn't need it as much as I did, but they were great courses.
Yeah.
And so interesting.
And they were just, you know, one or two times come down. Mm-hmm. Some of them were singular. A couple ran a few weeks, but it was a great opportunity to kind of re-engage with portions of the community that are still very curious and still very thirsty for knowledge, and there wasn't really an avenue for it. So you'd enrolled in a couple classes, and then I think you popped the question to Brandy Rideout just saying like, hey, how does this work and how does this get involved? And we're like, well, we have this committee if you want to join it. And the next thing we know, we're talking about a few more things. We invited you to the Roadrunners Athletics auction, and you got stuck at my table, which is how we really met. That was not probably maybe it was my best first impression. I don't know. You've known me now for long enough. That was notoriously the auction where I had one too many glasses of wine, I think, and bought a timeshare in Minnesota or Michigan that I never went to.
Wow.
Oops.
That was very nice of you to donate to
was.
The athletic
I did. I donated a nice portion of something I never utilized. But we sat at that table and we found out a little bit more about how passionate both you and Judy, your wife, are for sports. And so that was, a neat connection that, you know, we started with College of Business. Then we got to this continuing education and lifelong learning mentality. And then it turns out your daughter played softball. You're aware, especially now, of our new basketball program and our leadership under Dan Ficke. And so now you're an advocate for college athletics. But it's just so funny that all it takes sometimes is just that invitation because people want to be a part of something.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's funny that you mentioned that because I'm often wearing an MSU shirt, coat, something.
I love that we're both rocking MSU Denver softball today. I just want to point that out.
Some that I've bought, some that I've been given.
Sure.
So thank you very much. But I wear it all the time. And mm-hmm. it's amazing how many people come up to me. Oh, I went there, or I took a class there, or my kids go in there. Whenever I run into somebody that says, I went there, you know, I got a degree there, I always ask them, when's the last time you're on campus?
Yeah.
I said, you've got to come down to campus. You've got to see what's happening down there. I don't care if you were graduated 5 years ago or 40 years ago. It is different. It is a different vibe. And I've seen a change over the past 7 or 8 years since I've been involved. Mm-hmm. And it's a wonderful place to see how it's grown, how it's changed, how the students have changed. Mm-hmm. I mean, I love nothing more than talking to a class and and engaging with the students because it's so different and the questions they have are so different than I would have had when I was in class. It's just there's so many ways to get engaged.
Yeah.
I would just invite anybody that wants to, that has a little time at all. Mm-hmm. There are things you can do here. You know, I talk to some people and say, oh, I don't know. I say, come and talk to a class. Well, I don't know what I talk about. You'll find something.
Yeah.
Think about your career. Just talk about your career. They're interested in that. Mm-hmm. I've been talking to journalism classes. Hmm. And, you know, I was an accounting major. You know, what are you talking to journalism classes? Well, I talked to them about the university and how great their choice was to come here and the things they have here. I always sell the classroom to Career Hub.
Yep.
I mean, that's the big one. And it's scary how many students aren't aware of it. And I just pointed out and said, you've got to go knock on that door. It is critical for your success.
Yeah, it is. It's your point that even the conversations and the questions that are being asked by students these days is so unlike what you probably asked and what I asked in the early 2000s. What I've seen, at least from the faculty side, is that we need to be so much more thoughtful of meeting our students where they're at. So it's really challenged me to think through what does the world look like today and these students that are looking at it from this vantage point, how are we meeting them? And I think the C2 Hub, to your point, is a place that can answer a lot of those questions because they're the people that know. Mm-hmm. They have the relationships directly with industry, with partnerships to say, here's what we're looking for, here's what that needs to look like, rather than listening to, you know, a crusty old lady talk about something she did 25 years ago.
Yeah. Right? Well, that's what I always say. I always wonder how many students want to hear from grandpa at the front of their room.
Right.
I mean, but talking about questions, I've been getting a lot of questions about AI recently.
Yeah.
And I'm like, hey, I retired 7 years ago. I don't know what AI is.
Right.
But I actually talked to somebody that I used to work with and I told them about this AI and they gave me a great way to frame
to
AI and why it's not going to take away everybody's job.
Mm-mm.
And so I used it in a class I talked to last week.
Look at that. So you're still learning too.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So what got you involved in journalism?
My brother-in-law teaches journalism, a couple of classes.
Yeah.
He asked me to come in and talk.
That's awesome.
And, you know, anytime I can get in front of students, I've been asked, not so much lately, but when I first got involved, I kept getting asked, hey, why don't you teach a class? Why don't you teach a class? And I said, it sounds like work. I said, I don't want to do the lesson plans and the tests and everything. Give me a subject. I will talk to any class about anything.
Yeah.
But I don't want to be locked into teaching. And so I love any subject or just coming into any class and just talking about experience.
Yeah. And I think that's something that I value so much about the type of education and how comprehensive kind of our curriculum is here at MSU Denver, where we value that experience. Mm-hmm. I mean, even we've had a number of guests that have been IDP majors, right? And so much of what I love about the independent degree program is they'll take a look at your work experience and they'll give you college credit for it. So we have it kind of solidified in our foundation of who we are, that your experience, what you've done, what you've learned, and even if it wasn't here, is going to be valuable towards the degree that you're choosing. And I do appreciate so often when we have the opportunities, whether it's with affiliate faculty or faculty that are still working in the field or guest lecturers like yourself that can come in and say, yes, this is all textbook is true. And here's what it looks like when we're actually in that space. Because so much, at least, and again, I've only ever worked in higher ed, and this is a people business, but so much of getting things done, even when you know you have the right answer, is making sure that you're building kind of the bridges along the way and you're bringing people with you. And those are some of those things that we learn easier when we can hear a story about an experience that did that rather than just pass your CPA exam, right?
Yeah.
So I would like to talk a little bit about your mentoring program. So you mentioned your initial conversations day after you retired with Dean Murphy were, hey, I want to get involved. I want to spend some dedicated time in this space. And you guys created a mentoring program that was very successful for the College of Business for a number of years. Because I know you still talk to a couple of your mentees.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. You know, I get a lot of questions about mentoring. You know, how important is mentoring and so forth? And it's just critical to success, whether it's a formal mentoring or an informal mentoring. I had a whole lot more informal mentors in my career than formal mentors. And when I explain that to people, they say, oh, I understand that. You know, it's who you looked up to, who you tried to emulate. When I talked to Dean Murphy about it, the idea was to get alumni engaged with the school again. And so how do we line up alumni with students? The Intro to Business class has this half-hour mentoring project that each Intro to Business student has to do, where they have to interview an alum for 30 minutes and then do a report on it. But a lot of the mentors that I've talked to in that program said, I want something longer. I want to be able to get deeper into a relationship with the student and see where else I can help them. So that was kind of the impetus of the program. It was a slow start. Brandy was just fantastic helping us kind of pull it together. My ultimate goal was that we would set up a process, a handbook that we could give then to other colleges within the university and say, hey, here's how to do a mentoring program. And we got quite a ways there, but it just got too hard to either pull the mentors together or even the mentees and getting students to understand the value of having a mentor. So it did kind of die out, and then COVID killed it.
That killed it. A lot of things.
But as you say, I still talk to a couple of my mentees and they're very successful. And the thing that's nice is I have one that calls me.
Oh, that's awesome.
And says, hey, you know, let's go have lunch. I have this issue. I just kind of want to bounce off you or something. And it's the greatest satisfaction I could ever get is someone calling and saying, hey, you really helped me through my career.
I'm at a place where I need some help. And you're the answer. That's really incredible. We have, you know, so many mentoring programs that are scattered around this campus, typically very specific to either certain types of students or, in this case, academic areas. I'd love to see a time and space where we could really create some sort of unified mentoring approach, because I do think that extra thing that gets you to that next place, or that ability to just bounce ideas off of someone or say, hey, here's what I'm thinking. Am I completely wrong? The value of that is undersold in a lot of places, and you don't realize that you've needed it and actually relied upon it your whole life until you're finally on an island in some place. And gosh, I think about especially how uniquely we're situated in MSU Denver, where our alums stay here, right? 80% of our alums stay in Colorado. Vast majority are within 25 miles of where we're sitting.
So the availability to have one of those programs that could actually have face-to-face touch points and somebody that you could rely upon is something that I would imagine most of my colleagues at other institutions would die for, just to be able to have that population of alums. And so it's just figuring out, how do we create it? How do we scale it? And then how do we sustain it? Because to your point, your program started like gangbusters. Things were great. Things were going awesome. And then you realize it's a lot of work if you're going to do something right. And we got to think through the sustainability of some of these programs. But gosh, what a benefit the mentoring is.
Yeah. One of the other, I don't know, advertisements I need to do on this, because I'm really trying to sell that intro to business project, not as a project for the students to, not only as a project for the students to connect with a mentor, but also to learn the UpNotch program so that when they're looking for someone with some help, they can go into that UpNotch system, find somebody with the experience or a company they might be interested, so forth, and reach out to them. I think too many people right now are seeing it solely as the intro to business project.
Correct.
And so if there are any alumni out there that are looking for this type of opportunity, upnotch.com.
Yeah, it's a real easy way to get connected, because you're setting your own boundaries too as an alum. So I think about that from the standpoint, like I do the same thing at my alma mater, UCSD. I get probably one inquiry a month, maybe. I don't know that there's a lot of people that want to talk about how to become an alumni relations professional, because they don't know it's a job until, you know, it lands on your desk. But it is. UpNotch is a fantastic program where basically alums, we sync your LinkedIn profile to this system that then just makes you available for certain types of interactions with students. And it's limited to MSU Denver. You have to have your MSU Denver login as a student to access it. But if I go in there and I say, hey, I'm a political science major and I'm looking for somebody that has been doing public service work, you know, at the county level or the state level, I can search for those things. And then I'll identify all of our alums that have opted into this program and say, hey, yep, look, there's seven of them that say they are open to a career conversation, to a mock interview, or just a discussion to talk about these things. And it's been pretty incredible to see that we're facilitating a space where students can find somebody that at least you have an introductory point. We both went to MSU Denver. We both are Roadrunners. And now tell me about what you do, how you got there, and how can I kind of follow in your footsteps?
Right. It's another example of somebody that wants to give back to the university and only has 30 minutes a month. Well,
right.
you can do that very easily and give back to students that really want to know what's happening out there.
And I do think that as a student, that can be a really intimidating space to be in. Very rarely do we pick up the phone and say, hey, Brad, I have a problem. Will you help me? Like, that is a fantastic relationship and trust that you guys have built. If I'm just, you know, Jane Doe, the freshman sitting in a class, that can be an intimidating space to ask for some of that help.
Yeah.
Many of our students are first generation, that they can't even go to their parents and say, how do I navigate this system of higher ed to find these things? And so having this in front of them kind of brings down a few walls of those barriers, because you know the person on the other end has opted in, so they're willing to have that conversation.
And that's the absolute key that I talk to students about when I talk about UpNotch, is the mentors that are in there want to be
in
there.
To do this.
It's not a list of all the
it's
alumni.
It's a cold call, yeah.
You know, it's people that want to give back and want to spend time with you.
Yeah.
So use it.
Ah, I love it. I think that's the first time on this podcast that we've ever talked about UpNotch.
It is, because I've listened to all of them.
I knew you'd know. Fair enough. But yeah, no, the College of Business has done, I would say, the best. They've done the most to make sure that it is incorporated into curriculum. And I'd love to see kind of that expanse in those spaces. We'll get there. Ruby, did you have something you wanted to add?
Just how important it is for students to be able to find alumni that share some intersectional identities as well, and just seeing people successful in fields that they're interested in that they can relate to, on not just that they're in the community of MSU Denver, but on levels of perhaps they are people of color or are part of the LGBTQ+ community. And it's really hard to find those people, like you're talking about, being comfortable enough to say, hey, and this is a captive audience where you might be able to find people who look or feel like you, and they can provide some insight into what it's like to be on the outside of the university experience and have success.
I would agree. And that's a wrap. I'm just going to keep saying that.
That's how he knows where to edit. Exactly.
And that's it. And cut that part out. It's usually when I drop an F-bomb, then I'm like, you're going to need to cut that.
Not always.
No. Sometimes David does a really great job of figuring out when the F-bomb adds to the story.
Or he comes to me and says, there are 6 F-bombs in this one. Which 5 are we cutting? Because we're going to keep one for authenticity.
I know. It's just so hard. But I will say, for all the cussing that I have done on this podcast, I've only slipped up and cussed once on the air at a softball game.
Well, I was just going to say that. Mm-hmm. I can't believe you're so controlled, because there are some umps out there that you have wanted to jump on.
Correct.
And
for 12 years.
You hold yourself very well in the softball.
Thank you. It turns out I can be professional when needed. I just choose not to be most of the time. But I do appreciate that you know this, because you're at all those games and I can see.
Well, and the games I'm not at, I'm watching and listening. So.
Correct. And you're aware. And again, this is no shade on the umpiring and officiating that happens.
It's a hard job.
It is a hard job. Less and less people want to do it. This is my PSA that people should get involved in umpiring and youth sports and start in that space, because what we're seeing now in the college level where we're complaining about these umpires is because there's no one to backfill.
Yeah.
I think especially when we're at the Division II and Division III level, then you're not getting the cream of the crop, because right. if you're good and you're young, you're getting into Division I, which you should. But it's a hard job.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting as I think about it. My daughter works at a rec center mm-hmm. in Oregon, and she has all the umpires for all the sports reporting yeah. to her. And I need to talk to her when she's out for the holidays to say, hey, do you ever think about talking to these umpires about there is a path?
There's
of
a huge path.
Being an umpire, mm-hmm. you don't have to be great at a sport. That way you can stay involved in sports mm-hmm. and be very critical. I was a swimming official for mm-hmm. 1 year. And I was terrible.
Fair.
You know, I had to judge diving.
Yeah.
I didn't know
that's
diving.
Hard. That's subjective.
And,
yeah.
and they don't give you any training.
Yeah.
And they give you a book.
Yeah.
You know, here's
how big's the splash?
Yeah. yeah. And so, and they're not Olympians at the
right.
high school level.
Right, right.
And I got talking to a couple
yep,
times
yep.
by coaches, and
yep.
we'll never do that again.
Yeah.
But I have
no,
a lot of respect
not,
for
it's him. Not for everybody. And so mm-hmm. I do find myself at times being like, okay, I need to ease it down. But that's actually how I got into commentating, because I was at all these games anyhow, right?
Yeah.
Supporting the team, supporting my wife. And I think as a former athlete and former coach too, like I can't turn off the competitiveness. And I'd find myself in a space where, like, again, sitting with the parents of these student athletes that I've grown to build good relationships with. And then they're seeing like the dark Darth Vader side of Jamie when I get competitive. And I was like, it's not good for me emotionally. I just want to scream and yell all the time. That is not a productive thing. And so then I asked John Kitzman, I was like, hey, so how about you just let me on the air? He's like, let me get this right. You want to get on the air because you can't stop yelling? And I was like, but I think the microphone will be a good signal to me that, like, nope, you can't just do that. So I did. I dropped crap or shit once on the air in 7 years.
That's pretty good.
That's not bad. Because I do
bet
think
Annie
it was.
Dropped a lot more.
Oh, I'm sure she did. Because I do think it was a shitty call, and I think I said that is just a shitty call.
Yeah. But you need consistency.
You do.
As long as you have it consistent, mm-hmm. you can't complain as much.
Correct. I do it on both sides. Mm-hmm. I will always say, like, if it's the Shadron girl pitching, I'm like, well, that was a strike. Don't know where that missed. You know. But it is fun to see you. I mean, I'm up in my nest, and we always get a good conversation in between games when I get to scarf down some nachos before getting up there. But you come out to softball games, whether it's rain or snow, cold or not. I know typically Judy doesn't come out unless it's a little bit nicer weather.
She's don't blame her.
More of a fair weather softball fan, and I get it.
She spent a lot of time at very cold games.
I believe it. What is it about softball? Why has that been one of the sports that, I mean, obviously other than it being the greatest sport, right?
Yeah. Well, it really goes back to, I knew I wanted to be involved with MSU, but I also wanted to get Judy involved.
Mm-hmm.
And our daughter, as you mentioned, our mm-hmm. daughter played softball through high school. I thought that was a way to get her connected.
Sure.
Because, you know, she loves it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a way to bring her into the MSU family.
Mm-hmm.
And she does. She does enjoy it when she comes. And she understands my desire to come when it isn't the warmest.
Nice
or,
when
or,
it's the opening weekend, February 2nd,
yeah,
and it's going to
yeah.
be snowing. Yeah.
yeah. That one I might not be able to. That's her birthday. I might not be able to go to that one.
I won't even be at that one. I'm missing opening weekend.
Oh, you
because
are.
I've got a conference and a cabinet duty out in
so
Omaha.
When's the divorce?
Exactly. I know I did. I told Dana, I was like, I'm not going to be there. And actually, the first game of the season, I think we're playing Billings. And it's actually one of our former friends from grad school who's the head coach
wow.
now. So I was excited to see him because we've been following each other's careers. But he actually coached with Annie at Indiana State.
Oh, very cool.
And now he's the head coach there. And I was like, oh, so I'm not going to get to see Joe. I'm not going to be mm-hmm. able to do this. And I'm going to be sitting, you know, at a conference pretending to pay attention while I'm streaming someone else doing my job talking about the
yeah.
season.
It's
know?
Funny. funny you talk about your reaction and your feedback and your competitiveness. I don't believe I'm a real competitive person, but I do root for my teams.
Sure.
And last year I felt bad. A couple times Dan Ficke called and said, hey, you want to be coach of the day?
Yeah.
You know, and kind of told me what that meant and everything. I said, I don't think I want to do that. Why don't you find someone else? Well, the main reason is I can't sit at the end of the bench and not go nuts.
Correct.
And so I can't hold back excitement or less excitement.
Correct.
So it'd be better that I'm just up in the bird's nest. And
right. Just taking it in with at least a little bit of a perimeter so people don't hear me say the things under my breath.
Yeah.
But hopefully you're under my breath.
Yeah.
Right?
But, you know, again, softball got us in, and now Judy's going to volleyball. She went to a lot of volleyball games. I mean, what a great season we had there.
We had a softball team over at our house on Sunday for like the holiday party. And so it started at 4 and that game had started at 3. And so like the girls were coming in watching on the phone. They're like, oh good, the game's on. And nobody talked for the first hour because everybody just was gathered around our TV and half upstairs and half downstairs watching this. And the downstairs TV was actually like probably like 3 seconds ahead because it's all streamed.
Yep.
So you'd hear them go like, yeah! And then, oh! And then we're upstairs because I'm finishing cooking. And I was like, man, this is really tough. You guys need to stop saying that. But then it went from like, all of a sudden, all of us were like super excited. We're in it. And then everybody was just like super bummed. Mm-hmm. And then we had to like do our holiday party. It was like, but what an exciting season.
Yeah. And Judy's now coming to the basketball games quite often and so forth. You know, we just love sports. We've always loved it. I say especially amateur sports, but Judy has a connection to pro sports as well. So
she's a Bronco fan through and through.
Yep. That was a way to open a door. And again, I'd point out to any other alums that are into sports, there are some amazing sports teams on this campus that just don't get the notoriety. I mean, I talked to Todd Thurman as much as I can about, hey, how do we get more people to recognize how great some of these teams are?
Yeah. I think we're seeing a real cast. I mean, volleyball, we've had Alyssa on, you know Alyssa very well. We did Amy Watanabe on Dave Giving. So we've talked at length about that kind of dynasty of championship caliber and elite caliber volleyball. But soccer, women's soccer this year went to finally made it back to regionals, which is a big deal because, you know, we'd seen a couple national championships in the last 20 years in that space. And Coach Mertz has done a great job of building that back up. And our men's soccer program, not far out of that. Baseball been in regionals the last couple years. Softball got screwed. I'll say that. You know, I know, everybody. And that's not just because I'm married to the coach. That was a bad, a bad day. I'm still not over.
How do you feel about that, Jim?
I need something to put in this Dr. Pepper if I really want to tell you how I feel about that. But we have seen real success across the entire athletics department. And so I'm with you with this idea, especially of amateur sports, because what's nice is you can still have the excitement of sports and watch great caliber stuff, but you also get to actually know these kids. I say kids, young men and young women. But whether you have conversations with them, even if it's after a game, just saying hi or whatever the case might be, you start to get to know them. And then it becomes so much more exciting to follow them and their progress and their programs. And so that's what I think I love about college sports is that, you know, realistically, and at this level, I think you still do, you have 4 years to kind of follow somebody's life and be a part of that.
Yeah. And well, and that's what's so nice about D2, because D1 is, it's professional.
It is.
You know, you watch any D1 sport, I don't care what sport it is, they're professionals. But D2, the students want to be there.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not getting their college tuition paid for. Mm-hmm. They're not in NIL. Mm-hmm. They want to do what they're doing.
Yeah.
And it's fun to watch.
And there's still that pride about doing it for the team on your jersey.
Yep.
The amount of pride I still have for my alma mater and what that meant to be able to wear that jersey. And I think at the Division I levels, more students transferring, you're more worried about the money you're getting from your NIL deal than actually being on that team. You don't get as much of that. So I do think I will always stand by and say that Division II athletics is really the heart and soul of what collegiate athletics, I think, was always supposed to be.
Yep.
So, Judy, huge Broncos fan. And this is a big
from the
year.
Family.
Yeah. And this is a big year because Bo Nix, she's also an Oregon fan.
Yep. She's an Oregon grad.
Bo Nix is here. He's doing well.
Yes.
The team's doing well. She must be on cloud nine.
She is.
Yeah.
She absolutely is. We watched Bo for a couple of years when he was at Oregon, and she just was praying that the Broncos would draft him and was so excited. She got very mad at Nike and some of the jersey makers because they came out relatively quickly with a men's Knicks jersey, didn't come out with a woman's.
Yep.
And so she was like searching every day, and then finally they came out. So she has an orange one. She has a blue one.
Sure. The white ones are sharp this year, though, too. I don't know if they're selling those, but every time the Broncos are in their white and their blue pants, I'm like, that's a sharp look.
Yeah. But it's very exciting to see that the city excited again.
Agreed.
And we're hoping for the best.
That's right. Join us for the MSU Denver Alumni Book Fair as we celebrate stories, creativity, and connection. Mark your calendars for Friday, January 31st, 2025, from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. at the Tivoli Turn Hall. Discover books written by fellow Roadrunners, connect with authors, and explore a world of inspiration right here on campus. This is your chance to celebrate the power of words and the strength of our alumni community. Learn more and RSVP at msudenver.edu/alumni. We can't wait to see you there. Roadrunner special alert. MSU Denver is rising, and we want you to rise with us. For the first time ever, MSU Denver is in a comprehensive fundraising campaign with a goal of raising $100 million in support of our deserving university and students. Grab every Roadrunner you know and join us on February 19th as we celebrate our incredible university and look towards the future. Learn about our fundraising priorities, embrace your Roadrunner school spirit, and find out how you can help all Roadrunners rise. So save the date, February 19, 2025. You won't want to miss it. This episode is brought to you by Ducks. If they don't pay their tab, just put it on their bill. So we're on our 20th episode, I was told today. So thank you for being our 20th, which means that's almost two full years of podcasts, which is pretty incredible. We had your good friend, Russell Knowles, on this podcast a bit before, and I gave him a little bit of grief. And so now I want to hear the other side of the story. I told him, I said, hey, I heard you were hired for your first job by our good friend, Brad Kaplan. Was that at US West?
Well, no, it wasn't the first job, but it was I think it was his first public company job.
Okay.
And, you know, we worked together for a while.
Yeah. And you knew him when you were here as students?
Or? You know, I think we crossed paths, but we were Roadrunners, so we were always crossing against each other.
Yeah, we're just Spear.
Yeah.
And
But, no, we worked together for a while, and it's just great now that we're both back home.
Yeah.
And every time that we see each other, we just, it's like we've been talking for 40 years.
Yeah. It's incredible to me. And I said this, I think, to Russell, and I've said it multiple times in various venues, that it was so great to see him be the chair of the trustees, because I think that was the first time we'd had an alum in that role.
Well, I think he might be the first alum on the trustee board.
He might actually be. And so, if you don't know, the trustees are not people we choose, right? We basically give a list of people to the governor and say, these are people that we would like for you to consider, but they are appointed by the governor. And so for the first 30, we'll say 30 plus, maybe 40 years, we didn't have a single alum sitting on that trustee board. And so it was such a proud moment for so many of us alums to be able to say, like, that's really cool. Russell's in that position. Then to see him rise to chair. And what I loved in that space too was his intentional commitment to bring the Alumni Association board much closer and much more in alignment with what the foundation and the trustee board was doing. And I think you got to see a part of that and be a part of kind of that closer grouping of the three advisory boards that we have on this campus.
Yeah. As I've told Brandy, I think I've told you as well, I've been on a lot of different volunteer boards and so forth. I think the Alumni Association board here is the most active board I've ever been on. You know, we keep a scorecard of activities that...
But you're not competitive at all.
Well, no.
I'm kidding.
I'm saying for the whole group.
Correct.
And keep a scorecard of, you know, people's engagement with the university. Every one of our board members are very engaged. Mm-hmm. And it just so happens if they become unengaged and don't resign, we might help them resign, because we want to engage people.
Yeah.
And it's what makes it so successful, in addition to Brandy and her team, which are incredible. The people want to be there, want to help. I mean, we had speakers at different graduation events and our president's talking at graduation. And it's so great to see people engaged. And they're not all retired like I am.
No.
I mean, they have their young families, they have their jobs, their careers, but they're still finding the time to put in to give back to this university. And it's great to see.
And I will say, having, you know, watched kind of the evolution of that board. In fact, it was one of the very first things when I kind of took over the alumni portion of advancements operations, we put a hiatus kind of on the Alumni Association board because it wasn't that, right? And we kind of did like a year-long conversation with a bunch of alums. Roy Alexander was one that was a great advisor to me. And I said, Roy, you've been around for a long time. You've seen like what has happened, what isn't working, how do we need to rebuild this? And what we have today is the result of a lot of those conversations with a lot of alums to say, let's build a really impactful and meaningful board that does something. This isn't a head shaking and nodding board where we just come and report to you. This is the here's what the problem we need to solve. Let's figure out how to solve it. And then let's actually do that. To your point, what Brandy has been able to do in identifying some really key leaders in our communities and the ones that want to do the things. We've had Amber Mose on this podcast, who now is our alumni board president. She's somebody that if I just texted right now and said, hey, Amber, any chance you could be here in an hour and a half because we need to do a quick thing, she would figure out a way to do it. You're one of those people that you're a text away all the time. I think even in Brandy's notes, she's like, oh, Brad texts me at least once, if not twice a week, with some idea about something new that we need to do to be able to reach more students and be more effective in this space.
Yeah, I think there are a lot of people at the university get very nervous when they see me pop up on their phone because I do have come up with a lot of ideas. In fact, I still need to talk to Todd Thurman about a couple.
Perfect. I'll walk you over to Adam after this. So your interests, MSU Denver at the very top of these, also are very eclectic outside of MSU Denver. And I think it's awesome enough to be able to talk about and share with all of our listeners. So you guys travel a ton.
We try to.
Big benefactors and supporters of musical theater.
Yes.
Which you and I have connected on multiple levels, which you never think two random people are just going to talk at a basketball or softball game about musical theater. But most of our conversations are, what did you see last week? What's going on? So what is on your docket? What have you seen?
Saw Hamilton.
Okay.
You know, we see that every time.
It comes.
You know, yep. And we see almost every play every time it comes.
Correct.
And there are some that we probably won't go see again.
Sure.
But, you know, you have those. Mm-hmm. Got Funny Girl Saturday. Mm-hmm. And we actually saw that in New York.
Okay.
So it'll be interesting to see the traveling cast,
yeah.
Really looking forward to Back to the Future.
You were telling me about this.
Back to the Future, we saw it in London. Mm-hmm. And the staging and the electronics mm-hmm. are incredible. I don't know how they do it in a traveling show.
Sure.
In the West End, it was there for years, but really looking forward to that.
Yeah.
And it was really a fun play. So I would strongly recommend that.
My sister and I just got together and we bought Mean Girls tickets for my mom for Christmas. And she was like, do you think she'll like that? I was like, well, Mom, I mean, we're a musical theater family. I'm like, she'll appreciate just getting out and going to a show. I go, I don't know that that'll be up her alley because we grew up much more traditional musical theater. I mean, and as much as it might make people gag, but like we were Andrew Lloyd Webber people because, I mean, minus Cats because no one needs to see
Cats. I saw Cats in London.
Did you? Yeah. See, but you saw it in London. So that's a good story, right? But like we were Phantom, we were Les Mis, we were Joseph, we were, you know, all of that type of stuff and in that space. And I remember my first time I ever saw something that was a little bit newer was when I saw Lion King. It was probably like 2001, 2002
at Fantasia. Amazing.
And it was one of those things where I walked in and I was like, oh my gosh. Like I didn't know what to expect. I'm like, yeah, sure, I know the Disney movie. I'm gonna know the music. It's gonna be fine, but how are they gonna do this? And for the first time I was like, oh, this makes so much of the impact. And it's not necessarily just the music or the words or the story that's happening. It's the feeling that you're getting.
And 10 minutes into it, they're animals.
Correct.
They're not puppets.
They're not people. You don't even see them anymore.
Yeah.
It's incredible. And so then that kind of like triggered the things. Like even I saw Avenue Q, which is one of my favorites.
I love Avenue
Q. It is one of my absolute favorites. I don't think a lot of people, I mean, I know it won a handful of Tonys, but like not a lot of people.
It takes a special person.
It does. You got to have a
Judy's not in love with Avenue Q.
Fair, yeah. But it was one of those that I just thought was so clever. But same thing. I'm not seeing people. Yep. I'm just seeing puppets.
Right.
Like, nope, that's the situation. So it's been very interesting. And then since getting Annie involved in musical theater, because she grew up in just a non-musical artistic household, mm-hmm. they were athletes and that's what they did. When we started dating and I was explaining like, oh no, my family sings and acts and I'm the weird one that plays sports, but everybody's a actor and a musician. You could see just kind of like, oh gosh, is this going to work? And so I took her up to Chicago to see Wicked. And so I was explaining as we were driving up to Chicago, I was like, yep, so we're going to see the show. And it's like the precursor to the Wizard of Oz. And she's like, okay, like I can follow along. I'm like, so it's a made up story. Like it's how Glinda and Elphaba, who's the Wicked Witch of the West, how they were college roommates and like, da, da, da. And I wasn't expecting much because you could see just kind of the doubt in her eyes. I mean, you know her face well enough to be like, okay. And from like the moment that it started, all of a sudden she's like on the edge of her seat and just zoned in. And I was like, oh, thank God this is going to work because... part of my life. Like I got to make sure that I have that.
Have you gone to the movie?
I haven't yet because she's been out of town the last two weekends between recruiting and the softball
you could
convention.
Go without her.
I could, but then
I try to be, you know, I was like, I'm not.
So, and I also kind of wanted to wait for like all of the musical theater dorks to go through. Mm-hmm. I say that lovingly as one of them because I don't want to listen to the crowd sing.
And the crowd doesn't. I mean, they kind of come
good.
In the beginning
yeah.
that, no, let us sing.
Yeah.
But I was surprised that they didn't do it. You know, I was kind of tapping my feet.
Sure. I mean, and I'm 100% going to be humming like sure. very quietly along with things. But like, I was really nervous that people were going to be so excited about the movie to just come out and just start singing. I'm like, nope, that's not, yeah. I want to see this. But my brother just saw it a couple days ago. And he said it. He was like, guys, they did it. And he's the mm-hmm. most critical because he's actually a professional musical sure. theater person. And he is critical of all the things that happen. And he's like, they did it. They crushed it. This is it. And so now I'm even more excited about it.
Yeah. I don't know how they're going to do part two because, you know, part two, even in Wicked, was a little slow at times.
Correct.
So, but they'll do it.
Yeah,
I have full faith.
Oh, I'm excited. I just can't believe we have to wait a whole nother year for it.
Yeah. And again, the thing that's so perfect about mm-hmm. it is part one ends at intermission of the play.
Correct.
Which is so cool
yep.
how they brought it all together.
Yep. I know. I'm
just
so
brilliant.
Excited.
Just brilliant.
I know. I can't believe they were singing while doing it, though. This is the Bird Talk episode on Wicked. But yeah, they were singing live while doing it, yeah. which I thought, I know they did that in the Les Mis movie, which I remember being like a conversation in a sphere that was like, oh, that's a bold choice. And fair, but
They weren't flying.
And also most of them were actors first and musicians second, which I thought was unique. They did a great job. I mean, other than Javert, like I probably wouldn't put Russell, what was his name?
Russell Crowe.
Probably not. He played the part fine, but the voice gave a little, you know, Stars is a great song. It should have been really felt, you know. Anyhow, these are all my thoughts on it. But with Wicked, the fact that we have like Broadway and musical forward-facing people in that space, I appreciate so deeply that they wanted to create that chemistry and also that space where like, no, we're trying to actually show you that this is really hard to do. And when these people do it on stage, it's pretty fascinating. And I think Hamilton was a good, when they did the Hamilton on Disney Plus, that was a good entry point for people who maybe have not had the opportunity, the privilege, or even the interest in seeing some of what musical theater can be, to be able to be like, oh, this is a thing. You have to be in so much shape, the cardiovascular, that's there, not to mention you have to sound good and you have to act and you have to do all of these things. I think it's made it so much more accessible to people, which I love.
Yeah. It's funny you mentioned that because when they come to Denver with the high altitude, you can tell they're hurting.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I don't
know how long, especially in Hamilton, because that's so much breath work.
And I don't know how long they're here beforehand, but they have to get used to that.
100%. It's not like the Broncos, whenever they bring in a visiting team, you just have an oxygen tent on the side. These guys are on stage, right?
In fact, when I saw it a few weeks ago, we like to go to matinees. And, and one Saturday matinee, they have the subtitles, you know, on a screen. Mm-hmm. And that thing was rolling.
Oh, I'm sure.
I don't know how people could follow it.
It's fascinating. We saw Hamilton when it first came here. It must have been like 2021, because I remember we were still in masks. And I had not gotten too deep into it at that point, as many people, you know, everyone was already rapping all the things. And I was like, I mean, I know the story. I understand history. It'll be fun to watch. This is something new and different, and I'm excited to be on the forefront of seeing it. But I was so taken back by when we showed up, the number of young women that were dressed in like colonial attire. And then it just warmed my heart because I do remember the very first time we took my brother to his first show, which was Phantom of the Opera. He wore his white shirt, his black pants, a cape, and a mask, and would not take the mask off the whole time.
Cool.
I think he was four or five years old. We have a fantastic picture of it. And of course, right when it started, he started to sing. And we'd be like, oh, sweetie, no, like, you can't sing. Like, we're here to watch them sing. I know what that grew in him to start his like love and interest and now a career in this space. And so when I saw all these young girls in these big colonial hoop skirt attires, I was like, oh, I hope this is the start of your journey too.
Yeah. Well, that's what's so nice about these plays that are now coming out for kids, Frozen and so forth. It's, you know, it really connects them into the arts.
Which is wonderful. We saw the Tina Turner musical here. That was incredible. And it was like a concert at the end.
Right.
Which I was like, this is amazing.
Well, that's the way Mamma Mia always is too.
Yep, yeah, exactly. So that one was incredible. And then we saw Jagged Little Pill, which was another one that to me was a little bit outside of my scope. And I was so curious to be like, how are we going to craft an entire story around an album that like, that was my Bible. She was just here at Ballerina last year. And I took my sister, my wife, and my best friend. We're all in our 40s. And I was like, we're going to get good seats and we'll see if she can still sing. Who knows? You know, it's been a while. It was just like a communal therapy session for a bunch of 40 and 50 year old women sitting there because she crushed it. She sounded exactly the same. And it was all of us like reliving our teenage angst. At one point I looked at my sister and we're both crying and I was like, what's happening? But it was like the therapy we didn't know we needed because we just needed to be like 13, but in control again. Whoever played the lead, the mother out here, had a voice that absolutely.
It's amazing how much talent is out there.
It's so
they
much.
Just, it is absolutely incredible.
And it's not often. I think this is the first time I've been able to have a guest on to talk about my fangirl for musical theater.
We even go to some plays where we go to a lot of things at the Lone Tree Arts Center and the Parker Arts Center.
Yeah.
And they occasionally have some plays and so forth. And they've gotten some nice talent as well.
Yeah, I think we even connected that you, because you've gone up to the candles, candlelight.
Yeah, candlelight.
And that was where my brother was a... He was there for 2.5-3 years and most of the things. And I think you saw him in Shrek. And I was like, yeah, no, that was my brother dressed as an ogre.
Yeah.
And then.
And may the Boulder Dinner Theater rest in peace.
Yep. I know. What a bummer. Sad. I know. The dinner theaters are great too, I think, as entry points for people because you get a really great meal. And especially like at both at Boulder and Candlelight, it's actually the actors that are serving you. And I think
before your time, there was a place called Country Dinner Playhouse, which is at Arapaho and I-25, which is relatively close to where I grew up. And that was really the big one in town.
Yeah.
And a lot of great talent came through there.
So do you see many plays here at MSU Denver? Have you?
I've gone to a couple.
Mm-hmm.
They've been interesting. Mm-hmm. You know, I think our program could use a little oomph.
Mm-hmm.
What we really enjoy, Judy and I, the ones we've gone to, is seeing the students in the audience because it's their friends on stage.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think the plays bring in general public.
Sure.
It brings in the friends of the people in the play, and they get so excited when they see their friends out there and see them acting. And, you know, it creates a great audience feel for the production.
It does. And I think for most people too, if you don't know that your friend is, or you know, you've heard them say like, oh yes, I sing or I act in one of these things, you don't see that full personality come out until you see them in their element. I think it is very exciting for those students to be like, oh man, that's a whole other thing that you do.
And back to the Candlelight, last time we went to Candlelight, I think we saw Secret Garden.
Mm-hmm.
And for those of you who don't know dinner theater, the actors are our waiters.
We serve you. Yeah.
And so we were looking at the playbill and our waitress was from Metro.
Yeah.
And so I was talking to her about it and like 4 or 5 people in the production were from MSU.
Yep.
3 of them were going to be in a play at MSU.
Mm-hmm.
So again, there, you know, MSU has some great talent out there. And these are people that are getting paid for real plays.
Yeah.
And then coming here and learning their craft, which is great.
Yeah. There's always a handful of MSU Denver students up there. Cause even when my brother was a regular up there, he'd hang out with some people and he'd be like, oh yeah, well they were a Metro kid. And I was like, well, maybe. Okay. Secret Garden's got, I think, my favorite song of all time.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Lily's Eyes.
One that Judy wanted to see more than I did.
Fair. It is definitely a show that I would agree with you on, that like I don't need to see the whole show, but I could listen to Lily's Eyes on repeat for 24 hours and still not be sick of it. It just, I don't know. It's a song that speaks to me.
We know what your walk-up song is.
Exactly. Strangely quiet now. Yeah, the storm. Yeah. No, that wouldn't be a good walk-up song, but it's a beautiful song about how these two brothers are in love with the same woman, and they see her eyes in the child, and it's heart-wrenching. Yeah. I know. All things musical theater.
Need a Kleenex?
I might. That was very... I don't often get to talk about these parts of my life that I love so much. It's usually sports and MSU Denver. You know? Yeah. So I do want to make sure that we talk about the inspiration and why it's been important to you to continue to be a donor here and why specifically you've gone down the route of making a planned gift for MSU Denver. Because for those of our listeners who maybe don't understand our donor world, planned gifts are, to me, some of the most powerful ways that we can say that we believe in a place. So a planned gift is just what it sounds like. It's not a gift that is now, but it is a gift that you have incorporated into your estate plan some way, shape, or form. So whether that's incorporating it as part of a will or creating a trust, or there's all sorts of very fancy and tax evasive ways to make sure that money after you've departed has gone to the places that you want to go. But to me, it always signals somebody that believes wholeheartedly in not just where the institution is today, but in the leadership and the vision of where the institution is going to be. Because the best part about your gift is we're not going to get it for a very long time, Brad, right?
Let's hope. But Judy could last a very long time.
That's true. But we have this commitment that you've made that said, no, I'm not just sold in on what we're doing now, but I believe in what this institution is in 30, 40 years. We hope to see that come through. So what kind of sparked that as your giving avenue for getting?
Well, we really just kind of fell upon it. We were trying to figure out how to support a number of charities after we're gone. Mm-hmm. And rather than, you know, a sizable one-time gift and you're forgotten, mm-hmm. we really want to do something continuous mm-hmm. and over time. And working with the Denver Foundation, which is an incredible organization, they've kind of set it all up for mm-hmm. us. And the whole idea is we didn't want to be a checkbook. Mm-hmm. You know, going back to before I retired,
yeah.
and Judy and I were talking about retiring. Mm-hmm. We had just given a gift to a new hospital in Oregon. We were living in Oregon. And a couple years later, I was talking about retiring. And, you know, I said, you know, Judy, they're never going to name a wing after us. You know, we don't have that type of money.
Sure.
But what are the organizations that we really want to help over the long term?
Yeah.
And then we found the Denver Foundation to set this up for us to do. And we wanted to give back to the future and not just a point in time.
Yeah, that is very powerful because I think many of us have philanthropic urges, but we get caught in this like, well, I don't have enough money to make a difference. And that isn't true, right? Any money makes a difference in certain ways. And that's especially what we talk about here at MSU Denver. Like the amount of impact that a dollar, that your money, your dollars can have here goes a lot further than at other institutions, right? And other places. And there are plenty of charities and philanthropic organizations that can say the same, right? That this money is going to be applied. What I appreciate so much about what you just explained in your approach is that it wasn't just, what do you need right now? Let me help you do that so that we're meeting your needs of what is today. It's thinking about how can we make sure that wherever this is going, because we like that trajectory, that you're going to be able to have what you need to get there. And it just feels so much more strategic. It feels so much more intentional. And I would imagine as a donor, it has to feel a little bit more valuable at that point in time, because you're right. It's like, oh, we donated to a hospital, a need that absolutely needed to happen, but that probably bought XYZ or funded these positions, whatever the case might be, right? And then it's kind of done. Mm-hmm. This allows for a little bit more flexibility in saying that we believe in what we're doing now and whatever that looks like in 20, 30, 40 years. Now you have some substantial funds to be able to design something that's going to impact the most amount of people.
Right. And again, it goes back to what I was saying earlier about full circle. When I graduated from MSU, luckily I didn't have any debt mm-hmm. because funding was very different mm-hmm. at that time. But I had just gotten married, and we got married the March before I graduated. Mm-hmm. The only financials that I had was Judy's debt to the department store.
Sure.
And I grew a very nice career, you know, and MSU is the foundation of that.
Yeah.
And I wanted it to come full circle.
Yeah. Well, we appreciate it dramatically. While we don't expect every single person to think about MSU Denver and their wills, I do think that we can expect more people to, because it's a less threatening way, letting your interest and your desires of what you actually want to accomplish not interfere with the day-to-day strife that we have on maybe making our ends meet. And so planned giving, whether it's through a foundation and a donor advised fund like at the Denver Foundation, or through any sort of other type of estate mechanisms. It's such a powerful way to signal that we believe in this place. And the exciting part is you have no idea what that amount's going to be at some point
right.
in time. If everything goes
what's
well.
Left over.
Exactly, right? And so there isn't that pressure. And not to mention the fact that now, because we haven't gotten that money yet, we got to keep you close. We got to keep having you on the podcast and make you feel really good about yourself.
Yeah, but I also want to make sure people understand we're still giving every year. We're still giving throughout the year.
Correct.
I mean, we're not just waiting to die for you to be supported.
Especially now, being in the middle of this comprehensive campaign, right? Raising $100 million for MSU Denver. We've had donors step up in ways that we've never had before. We got our first eight-figure gift, right? $10 million from Gina and Frank Day to create the Gina and Frank Day Health Institute, something that the institution had never had before. I mean, I think when I started 11 years ago, we maybe at that point in time, it had three gifts that were over seven figures. So $1 million or more.
I'm surprised we had that many. I remember when I first got involved, I looked at the endowment.
Yeah.
And it was, I think, $7 million or something.
Yep.
As we said, you know, my wife is an Oregon grad. They have a lot more digits in their endowment.
100% they do.
But we're getting there.
We are. And I will say the commitment that Christine and Dr. Davidson and the foundation board has made in the last, really the last 7 years, the concerted effort to say, no, one of our goals is in fact to grow that endowment is very important, right? And so we're in that 30-ish million dollar range with hopes of being, I think, at 40 or 50 by the end of this campaign. I mean, so that's huge growth when we're talking about a few number of years, right? Because again, it's not just endowed money that we're raising. We also need to raise our immediate use funds too, because there are programs on this campus and opportunities that rely on the fundraised money to put forward the product that they're putting forward.
There's a need. And the other thing that I think people need to realize that was a big eye-opener for me, back when I was in school, the state federal government was paying 70% of our tuition. We had to pay 30%. So it was relatively affordable. I had to pay for my own education. So now it's the other way around.
And probably worse.
And probably smaller where, you know, now the students have to pay 70, 80%. Well, it's part of the reason that the school debt is so crazy. You know, luckily we've been able to stay very affordable. And I just want to make sure that alumni that maybe were in going to school 15, 20, 30 years ago realize this big turnaround. And it's not just because the cost of college is going up. The funding mechanism's totally changed. And that's why the university needs so much help.
Students
need help.
The burden has shifted, where before the state took on the vast majority of the actual operating costs for an institution. Your portion of tuition helped make sure that other things were paid. Now it is the flip-flop. If we want to continue to be affordable, then the answer can't be tuition, because we don't want to make our education.
But that's the other thing that I've learned about through my involvement with the legislative advocacy group is – the state also limits how much we can increase our in-state tuition.
Correct.
And there are universities that are a little bit further north up here that can go grab students
out of state
and charge quite a bit and get a lot of money. We don't have those options.
Yeah, I think 3% is typically the cap, 3% tuition increase. Every once in a while, you can ask for up to 5%, but that, again, is not something we
want to do.
Yeah, fundamentally, that's against our values to do that. And you're absolutely right. This distinction between in-state and out-of-state is where it becomes problematic for MSU Denver. Some of those burdens and those caps don't exist for out-of-state students. And so you look at institutions, both of whom that are up north, you look at their base and they're 40% out-of-state, 50% out-of-state. And so then you're able to drive an entire different revenue source that is at most times about double, if not
at least,
the in-state costs. They're refilling their bucket through that business model. We're limited on that business model because our function is not to be necessarily a school that goes out of state for the majority of our students. When you think about why we were created, it was to be the educational resource for students of Colorado, in Colorado, specifically Denver, and we want to stand true to that. But what that does is that really puts us at a deficit in terms of looking for alternative revenue sources like out-of-state students or other things. So philanthropy has come in as a place where, gosh, we can solve that problem there, but we're talking about a lot of generous donors that would need to come to the same agreement that this is a worthy place for their donations.
Absolutely.
I know. I forget you're in the Champions Program. Yeah. We could have spent another episode talking about the state of higher ed funding in Colorado.
Yeah.
All right. I think it's time for rapid fire. Pew, pew, pew. Pew, pew, pew. Now, I'm sure you've never heard these before, so you haven't thought about them.
I've never heard the answer, so.
We'll see what comes out. Yeah. All right. What is your favorite MSU Denver memory, Brad?
Oh, it has to be reengaging with my wife.
That's true, yeah.
So, yeah, we had known each other before, but we ran past each other on campus one day and started studying together and ended up getting married.
And
43 years later.
Ugh, I love that. The library is very special to you because of that. You did a lot of studying in the carols there.
We did do our studying there.
Yeah.
So yeah. I had to explain what carols were to some people, but they're still up there.
Yeah, I know.
In fact, I grabbed a book from one of the shelves, and the last time it was checked out was 2003.
Oh, my goodness.
So, you know, I'm not quite sure what the books are doing there because I think everything's online now, but yeah. It makes it look like a library.
Yeah, it makes it feel like there's some sort of sense of reverence, you know, like yeah. Be quiet. And yeah, I get it. That is absolutely. Very cool. What does it mean to you to be a roadrunner?
I thought I'd have a great answer for this. you know, it's a way of life for me now. It's just ingrained in what I do. You know, they'll ask me, well, what do you do now that you're retired? I go to school. I mean, yep. You know, I wish it was more ingrained earlier for me, but when you're working your career, you don't always have time. Yeah. Again, Dean Murphy kept me involved on the advisory council years while I was still working, even when I was living in Oregon. Mm-hmm. You know, she'd call me up before a council meeting and say, hey, you know, here's what we're going to talk about. What do you think? It's just that engagement that this is the community. This is Denver. And, you know, I smile every time I see a commercial or anything about it or a new publicity change makers or whatever. Yeah. I mean, it's what everything is about.
I love that. All right. If you could put a billboard on campus with a piece of advice for all students to see, what would it say?
Yeah, this one's easy. As my big mantra this year is find your community. Yeah. No student should feel like they're alone on this campus. There are other people going through the challenges or the excitement that you're going through. I had a big eye-opener late last year. I went to an awards evening, an awards dinner. Never realized there are like 80 sanctioned groups on this campus. They're kind of called fraternity sororities, not like a lot of people think of fraternity sororities. Mm-hmm. They're sanctioned groups of people with common interests. Mm-hmm. And I'm just find that community that you can engage with so that you don't feel like you're by yourself because they're out there and everyone should feel connected. Mm-hmm. Talk to professors, talk to other people about what your interests are. You know, I tell students, just walk through Tivoli. They're there. Just read what's on the doors. You'll connect with something there. Yeah. But that would be the key. Find your community.
I love that. Well, Brad, this has been delightful. I could do this all day, but I'm sure you have other volunteer things to do on campus or other stops that you've planned since you were coming here.
Yep, this is great. I appreciate the time.
I know. Sorry it took us 20 episodes to get you here, but
You know.
But you're here.
It's not 21st.
It's not 21st, so.
So whoever's 21st, sorry.
Sorry, dude.
Thank you for joining us for another episode of Bird Talk, special accommodation provided by University Advancement. Thank you to Ruby Matheny, Brandy Rideout, production provided by David Sharman, and I'm your host, Jamie Hurst. Keep running, Roadies.